to introduce Dr. Portier, who had the foresight to provide us with a really wonderfully topical title slide today. Dr. Portier is the director of the National Center for Environmental Health, and as well as the director of the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry at the CDC, a position he's held since 2010 after a long and distinguished career at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Dr. Portier is an internationally recognized expert in the design, analysis, and interpretation of environmental health data, with research interests spanning from cancer risks to the health risks of climate change. He's contributed to the development of risk assessment guidelines for national and international agencies, and has either directed or contributed significantly to numerous risk assessments over his long and distinguished career, including recently directing a multi-agency review of research needs on the health effects of climate change for the entire U.S. government, a document that came out Earth Day last year. Dr. Portier is the recipient of numerous awards, including the prestigious Spiegelman Award from this organization, the APHA, and the Outstanding Practitioner of the Year Award from the International Society for Risk Analysis. And he will now help us transition from the world of infectious diseases to this SYN world of multiple exposures, multiple sources of data, as he talks about the use of surveillance and monitoring data in evidence-based prevention. Thank you.
Thanks, John. I'm actually convinced, Ellen, that I need to go and bring the infectious disease world into my environmental public health tracking system. You've actually convinced me. I'm going to have to go see if we have good MRSA data. Well, maybe we can change that. So I thought I'd start simple and work through some of the tracking information we've been trying to work on for the last 10 years at CDC. I have way too many slides, so I hope you read fast, because I'm just going to quickly talk and blast through the slides. This is to remind me to tell you that environmentally related disease is not a small proportion of diseases out there. It's about 13 to 16% of the cancers in the world, for example, are environmentally caused, according to WHO anyway. And even when you look at lung cancer, where we know smoking is the largest risk factor, the second largest risk factor is environmental. Understanding the role in the environment on health is not just understanding environment and not just looking at health. The effects of other things in our environment, as we saw in the previous two presentations, play an important role in the modulation of the environmental effect. So as we look at environmental health and public health tracking associated with environmental health, we have to take into account everything we possibly can: genetics and life stage, behavior, as well as environmental factors. Three core functions of public health are affected by our ability to track environmental issues along with health issues at the same time: the assessment of whether or not there is an effect out there, the development of policies, and the assessment of those policies to see if they are in fact working the way they should, and the assurance of the public that we are doing what's right for them and they are living in environments that will not harm them. The foundation of the public health surveillance program at CDC, and this is true also with the environmental public health surveillance program at CDC, is the creation, the collection of data, turning that data into information that can then become knowledge that we use for action. Without adequate surveillance, both local, state, and federal officials cannot know the true scope of the existing health problems out there and cannot recognize new diseases that will arise. MRSA is a good example. The Environmental Public Health Surveillance Network and the data associated with it are used to assess environmental public health status and trends, define priorities, plan and evaluate programs, not just by us, but many of the federal and state agencies, and to stimulate research in this area. There are different types of data that go into environmental public health tracking and environmental public health surveillance. There's the environmental data, but just having environmental data is not enough, and I'm going to spend some time talking about exposure versus the environmental data itself. We'd love to have exposure data, and then health data to go along with that. I'm pushing my environmental public health tracking network right now to look at social determinants of risk. What can we add to this database and this tracking network that would bring that into play? And now that I've heard the two talks this morning, I'm going to go over and talk to my infectious disease partners and see if we can't begin to bring some of their information into our public health surveillance network. There's a lot of data activities associated with this. systematic collection of information is extraordinarily important, collecting it in the same way, at the same place, all the time. I'm a statistician. You're going to hear that sort of mantra from statisticians all the time. Integration of that information in one place so we can look at it, understand it, analyze it, study it, and use it. The analysis and the interpretation thereof. It's also important. I'm a firm believer in open government, and it's extremely important that data is available for others to look at. It's not only our credibility, but as smart as we are at CDC, we're not as smart as everybody out there. And so giving others the opportunity to look at the data, use that data, analyze it, and reach different decisions than us, and challenge some of our decisions is an important part of any database and any tracking system. These surveillance systems are very complicated. They hit you at all kinds of levels. This is just to illustrate the type of problems you run into. We collect data on asthma, incidents of asthma attacks. We collect hospitalization data. We collect mortality data. And we look at office visits data. But linking those to the same person in the same community and trying to understand the progression that goes on is a very complicated piece of trying to track asthma. It's one that we haven't solved yet, but it's something that gives you an idea of how difficult this type of tracking can be. Now, our Environmental Public Health Tracking Network consists of modules, and we keep moving modules in as we develop them so people can go to our website and extract data. One of the modules we'll be releasing this year is the Climate and Health module, which is looking at environmental conditions, disease risks, and disease occurrence that are related to climate change. We're working very closely with NOAA and the U.S. Department of Commerce to bring the type of data into the tracking network that we need to monitor the climate environment and use that to do some public health tracking. There are a lot of challenges and opportunities associated with public health tracking. I thought I'd touch on a few of those. Separation of health and environmental functions at the national and state levels is a problem with public health tracking. We have historically collected environmental data in the Department of the Environment or at the Environmental Protection Agency, collected health data in the Department of Health or at the Centers for Disease Control, and bringing the two together is proving to be a real challenge. The other thing that's important is a lack of resources devoted to environmental public health and in this type of activity, environmental public health. And that has become critical in the last few years. I'm not going to go through all of these data issues and challenges in 15 minutes. I just don't have time. But there's a large number of them. I'll point to three of them just to illustrate some of the problems. The data availability and quality at the level of coarseness that we want it. We want to go down to the census level. That's where we need to be right now. Personally, I'd like to go to the individual person level, but we're not going to get there for a long time. But just getting down to the census level would be nice, but that's not how it's monitored in this country. That's not the information we have. We can get some information at that level, but the rest we can't get. And so building a system that will get us that fineness of information is something we have to have. We're collecting data. This is a network, the Environmental Public Health Tracking. It's a network. It's not something that CDC owns and controls and says you have to do it this way. We're collecting data from different state agencies that have decided to join us in this. We're collecting data from EPA and NOAA and other federal and state agencies that are providing us environmental information. So as such, we're kind of pulling it all together, and data compatibility becomes a real big problem. And finally, we just had a session in here on biomonitoring, but the same holds true here as it holds true for virtually all health data that's out there, and that is right to know and right to privacy drive a lot of the issues of how much we can use this data to help drive decisions and make things better. There's no national medical care system in the United States. Physicians are independent businessmen, so getting information from them on diseases like MRSA and emerging diseases is a real problem that's the department is working very solidly on, and we're part of that, but that's going to take a long time to get through. We do get healthcare data. It's not the same as physician data. We'd love to have physician data instead. Emergency departments are required to report certain things. We collect all that information. Some of the administration data is useful, but primary and secondary diagnosis coming in is not always the same as the diagnosis going out. And it's not true that in every case we can get both diagnoses. There's all sorts of other problems associated with using hospital care data. I told you about the data resolution and reaching to local levels, which is where most of environmental public health really does happen, and we have to be able to reach down there, and that's our target, but it's going to take a while. Appropriate exposure metrics are really an issue. Just because I have the amount of air pollution that's out there, just because I have the amount of contaminant that's in water in the systems that people are drinking, doesn't mean I know how much people are getting, and I don't know how much it's affecting them directly. And so for that, we need something else to be able to translate it to the public. And indeed, I already talked about measuring the health impact. Here's a couple of examples of ways in which this type of data have been used in the past. New York City was seeing an increase in childhood asthma hospital stays and emergency department visits, especially as it related to a cycle of school year versus not school year. So they decided to move some key messages in asthma management up to the beginning of the school year, stress them, push them, based upon the tracking data, and now they're tracking a decreased rate of asthma attacks and hospitalization in New York City, almost certainly due to the advisories they were doing. Deepwater Horizon oil spill. When Louisiana was faced with 4.9 billion barrels of oil spilled into the Gulf of Mexico off their coast, they had a lot of people very worried. They had a lot of people coming into the state who were untrained to do emergency response and doing some of the cleanup that was going on in the state. The tracking program was there. They partnered with the poison control centers. They went through a tremendous amount of effort to keep track of what was going on, to help notify OSHA of problems that they were seeing, to help train, along with NIHS and others, the workers that were coming into the state, and undoubtedly improved public health for the workers, the emergency responders, and the residents of the state of Louisiana. In California, cooling centers can be costly in the case of a heat event, an extreme heat event, and can be life-saving, however. The city of San Jose, the political leaders, how much time? 5 minutes?
Yeah.
The city of San Jose political, the council and everyone else, didn't want to spend the money in setting up the cooling center. So the tracking program went out and provided proof of health impacts of heat in the city of San Jose directly and began the process of approving additional cooling centers. And that worked to open them up and put the funds necessary to protect people during heat events. Cancer in Maryland, we are constantly faced at CDC with investigating cancer clusters. Here, the tracking program in Maryland was pressed with two communities that were worried about a possible cancer cluster and were able to use their tracking information to alleviate the concern of these two communities and show them that they were not anomalies for cancers in the state of Maryland. There's a lot of missing pieces here, and a number of major initiatives we'd like to see added to this, some that we are working on, some we hope to see. First of all is a biomonitoring program. This country probably spends, I know it spends, hundreds of millions of dollars a year on exposure monitoring, water, air, soil, et cetera, food. And we spend a small amount, less than $30 million, on biomonitoring in this country. Biomonitoring, what does it do? It integrates genetics, it integrates your entire living space with your environmental exposures to tell you what you are really exposed to, at least for some of the things we can measure. So in addition, with biomonitoring data and classical exposure data in the same communities, we can get an extremely good handle on what's happening in those communities in terms of what people are actually being exposed to. We need to work on a national biomonitoring network, just like we have a national environmental public health tracking network. We need that type of capability to move into the future because this is part of the exposure science of the future. We talk about the genome. We talk about all of the omes out there. Here's the exposome, and this is something we really need to work on. There are a lot of other reasons to have this type of capability at the community level to allow us to do some targeted studies to understand environment and the social determinants of risk and the environmental determinants of risk all together and look at some of these changes that are happening in communities. Not just chemicals. If we're going to do biomonitoring, we're going to do it on a national scale, let's look at nutrition. Let's look at vitamins. Let's look at trans fatty acids. Let's look at all the things in the people that we can possibly look at in these communities while we look at environmental determinants of risk. Then we can get at some of the issues that both Linda and Ellen were talking about in terms of the complexity of the exposures with our day-to-day living. I think all of that's extremely important, and I'd like to see that expand to the granularity of the local communities. Climate change is a special area where we think this type of environmental public health tracking is going to play an important role in the future, looking at the impacts of drought, heat, and weather-related events is something we're going to begin to track very carefully as we move forward. There's still a lot more that needs to be done. There are so many things happening in environmental public health right now that we need to get a handle on and better understand. A competent environmental public health tracking network will help us to better understand what's happening in our environment, and we will be better placed to deal with it when the next one occurs. Take-home message, that the information we need for environmental public health is more of a process than it is just a data set. It's not something we simply possess, it's something we need to use. It must be shareable, it must be comparable, it must be presentable, and it must be understandable not just to public health experts, but to the public in general. Because this is where the public health actually occurs. It occurs in these local communities, and they need to be able to use this information in a way that can lead to action. Some of the approaches to the challenges out there, these are very straightforward. Be flexible, sustain the resources we have, stay current, stay relevant, address the community concerns with the research needs and the data resolution, fill the data gaps that are out there, and always focus on the impact of public health policy so that you can show what's working and what's not, and we're not arbitrarily putting into place policies that have no good use in public health. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And you are welcome to follow us on Twitter.
We have time for one quick question. Yes, sir.